That's good. That's why when we attend any type of Dharma talks or Dharma gatherings, it's very important in the beginning that we do a short meditation together to clear obstacles, open up our mind, release some frustrations we may have, and to be ready. So it's very important that when we get together for Dharma teachings, we do a meditation together. And the reason we do a meditation together is when we see people together, we feel energized. If you go to a party, or if you go to a disco, and you see one or two people hanging out there, you leave very fast. If you go to a place and the place is filled, and they're dancing, you want to dance. If they're drinking, one or two of us might want to drink, not all of us, but we're happy for them. But if you go to a place where nobody's doing anything, they're hanging in a corner, hanging out somewhere in a corner, picking their nose, you wouldn't want to join them, but you wouldn't want to be there either. So therefore, when you're doing meditations, like going to an internal disco, that internal disco, what does a disco do? A disco provides fun, entertainment, relaxation. It takes away from our pains and problems. It temporarily relieves us from our distress. You see, we go clubbing, we go to pubs, we go to drink. The reason is because we want happiness. We want happiness. That's the only reason we go there. Why do we want happiness? Because our day is stressful. Our husbands are monsters. Our wives are witches. Our boss are tyrants. Our friends are not understanding. Traffic was horrible. You go to a restaurant, you meet a nightmare waiter. I've experienced that yesterday. Et cetera, et cetera. So you go to a pub to be happy. Why? Because you weren't happy the whole day. You weren't happy the whole week. You're not happy with what you have. You're not happy with what you have is because you have it, you don't know how to deal with it. You have it, you don't know what to do with it. When you don't have it, you want it. When you have it, you don't want it. When you have it again, then you want to change it. So it's this constant type of fighting with ourselves all the time, which is endless all the time. So when we go to a pub, when we watch a movie, when we go out, when we go to socialize with our friends, when we go to have yam chai, when we go to have tea, when we do anything, the reason is because we want to be happy. Some of us, we have nothing to do. We want to make more money. We want to make more money. It's not for the money anymore. It's that we want to be distracted. Why do we want to be distracted? Because we're not happy with what's going on in our lives. So we go out, we go clubbing, we drink. Temporarily offers us release. Some of us go shopping. Some of us look for people to cohabitate with. There's a lot of ways that we want to forget ourselves. I wouldn't be looking at her if I was you. Or we get the stomach rubber out on you. Now, that's why we're unhappy. So we go to a club and we go there. What do we want to do? We want to forget. We want to talk about BS. We want to talk about sports. Who cares who won? We want to have a drink. We want to have another drink. We don't care how much it costs. Do you know why people spend a lot of money on alcohol? Because it temporarily relieves them from their unhappiness that they created themselves. You know why people want to go have yam chai, SS2, or wherever, you know, hang out at a mama stall and talk and gossip about politics and sex and fun and clothes and fashion and people and who they slept with? They want to go on and on. Why? Because they want temporary relief from their unhappiness. So they're willing to pay for it. They're willing to meet up. But you see, those are our minds screaming at a method to find happiness. Screaming. It's clear that our mind wants happiness. But the method is not wrong or right. It just doesn't bring the result. See, we got to stop judging wrong and right. Religion always tells us this is wrong, this is right. It's a little too tight. The kind of religion that I would like to share with people is what Buddha really intended, I think, which is not to make you wrong or right. It's a matter of finding the correct cause for the correct result. To get the correct result, you have to have the correct cause. It's as simple as that. It has nothing to do with wrong and right. That's why I've had many, many people come and confess to me in the past. They have. Many, many people. That they're a gambler. They've hurt people before. They've stolen. They've had affairs. They slept with a lot of people. They feel guilty with their partners. I've had a lot of people. You see, my job is not to tell them that's right or wrong. They know if it's right or wrong. You see, if they know that's right or wrong, the problem is knowing right and wrong, they don't know what to do about it. So they continue not because they want to continue hurting people around them or hurting themselves. They continue because they know no other method at this time. So religion, in this case, Buddha Dharma, helps us to not be judgmental. But at the same time, not being judgmental doesn't mean not examining what is right and wrong. Not being judgmental means criticizing oneself, criticizing others, or taking criticism, and it stops there. Someone criticizes you, you should examine, is it true or not? If it's true, do something about it. If it's not true, it's their opinion. Fighting it out doesn't matter. Justifying and explaining yourself doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? Because justifying and explaining never ends. So when we go to a disco, when we go to a pub, when we go watch TV, when we go play sports, when we do anything, it is to distract our minds from our unhappiness and dissatisfaction that we feel. We can be successful in business and we feel still unsatisfied. So we find things to do. We look in the mirror, see what we can do with ourselves. We look around us, see what we can redecorate. We look at our car and we see what we can rebuy. We look at our wife and see what new wives we can get. We look at our husbands and think how to get rid of them. We look at our boyfriends. We look at our girlfriends. We look at everything. We might even get bored of colors and just wear white. We do a lot of things. Yes, a lot. What is that all for? To bring happiness. Bring happiness. So now we're here. We're at a Dharma talk. It's going to be really happy if we know what it's for. When we go to a disco, when we go to a pub, when we go out, when we drive around, when we watch a movie, we want to be happy. Why? Because we want to forget our troubles. We want to be away from our troubles, but actually it's creating more troubles. It costs more money, takes more time. It ingratiates in ourselves to rehabituate and habituate and solidify our habituation of wasting time and procrastination. When we tell someone off and we hurt them and we hurt the people around us, we hurt ourselves. And we give a message to sentient beings. We give a message to everybody. It's all right to be nasty. It's all right to be negative. It's all right. Look, I'm a Buddhist. I'm a great practitioner and I can be nasty. I have vows. I'm not different than you. You don't have vows. I have vows, but I can do everything you do. So we send a very negative message out to people. Why is it negative? What's the difference between a practitioner and a non-practitioner? What's the difference? It's a very negative message. And that negative message comes back to us. Why? Because we send another message to ourselves, and that message is what? That message is, look, that person didn't react back to me. That person didn't harm me back. That person didn't say anything to me. So it's all right to do this. I'm going to do more. That's a subliminal message we send to ourselves, and it rehabituates and becomes firm, becomes strong. It's very, very dangerous that way. Very, very dangerous. So when we come and do meditation, when we come to chanting or we listen to the Dharma, it's the same as going to the disco. Why? It temporarily takes us away from our problems. And we have our mind focusing on something else. What's the difference? There is no difference on a superficial level. Once you're attending Dharma talk, you're listening, you're doing prayers, you're doing chanting, you're doing meditations, and it's very powerful. Because during the meditation, during the chanting, during the prayer, you don't think about your stress and your problems, your witch wife and your monster husband. You don't think about that. You don't think about your nasty neighbors. You don't think about your tyrant boss. You don't think about any of that. Why? Your mind is thinking about something else. Because we have told our mind we can only think this and this and this. So when I'm thinking this, I can't think that. That's what we've told our minds for now. So what happens is, the difference is, if you sit here in a teaching and you just listen to all of this, it will be no different than sitting in a pub drinking. Why? After the pub, you're back to your life. After the teachings, you're back to your life. So if you sit in Dharma teachings and you don't apply it to your life and you don't apply it to yourself and make a change, it's no different than sitting in a club or a pub. It's no different. Why is it no different? Because afterwards, what's the result? What is the result? So if we think that we're virtuous by going to the temple, we're virtuous by praying, we're virtuous by meditating, we're virtuous by doing some mantras, we have to tell whether it's virtuous or not by the end result and the end product. If the end product of the teaching, the end product of the meditations that we're transforming and we're changing, then it's different than going to a pub or a disco. Why? Over there, we're just distracting our mind. So if we go on retreats, If we come back from our retreat, we're basically the same as before the retreat. It was just another distraction method that our mind did. I've done that before. I went on retreats. I've seen people on retreats. They didn't go there to be enlightened. They went there to get away from a bad relationship they were in. Well, I've met some people like that. And when they go back from their retreat, they go back to the bad relationship and they still continue to fight. So my point is that it's what you do afterwards. You see, if you go to a pub and you sit there and you drink orange juice or whatever and you talk to your friend and you give them some comfort and then you talk to them again, and you see their mind transforming, then going to the pub is very virtuous. But if you go to the pub and you talk and you guys just bring each other down, each other depressed, or you get nowhere, then it's non-virtuous. Why is it non-virtuous? Because there's no results. Similarly, if you go for yum chai, if you go out in one of these mamak stalls are those 24-hour open coffee shops, and you sit there with a friend, listen to their problems, and talk to them, hang out with them, and talk to them, listen to them, and talk to them, hang out with them. Day after day, year after year, talk about gossip and fun and politics. You just talk about that all the time. But your mind is not improving from the talk. Their mind is not improving from the talk. Then it's just another wasteful activity. It's not negative or good or bad. It's not judgmental. It brings no results. So we enjoy it. You have to examine why. We enjoy it because it distracts us from something else. We're not enjoying it because it itself is fun. Getting together with another person and just talking about your problems and BSing and wasting time, why is that fun? It is fun, and we've labeled it fun because it takes our mind away from some things that are disturbing us in our lives. So therefore, similarly, in Dharma class, if we attend Dharma class and we leave Dharma class and we're exactly the same, year after year, month after month, day after day, then Dharma class activity is nothing. It doesn't benefit us in any way. Why doesn't it benefit us? Because there's no results. No results whatsoever. And that's very important to know. Very, very important to know. I have this place for some of you who are new. It's called Dame Kang. Da is self. Me is no self. Kang is house. So this is the house of no self, meaning those who enter here receive teachings on destroying the self-cherishing mind. No self doesn't mean you don't exist. No self means that you don't exist the way you perceive yourself to exist. You exist from truth. So Dame Kang is the house of truth, or house of no self. This is what we call Dame Kang. This is where I give smaller audiences or meetings or talks or teachings, and this is where we gather. And the book club is very special, is because, well, every month we get an assignment from me. It could be a book, it could be a VCD, it could be a video, it could be a magazine, it could be a clipping. We're going to be very full of variety. And what it is it was designed originally for the staff and the volunteers and the people who work in the various departments so that they have an accelerated weight toward learning the Dharma so they can be of more benefit to the public. That's what this class is all about. So we have regular book club members, and then we have guest book club members. Guest book club members. And the guest book club members can become members eventually. And they have to be very steady and stalwart and very dedicated to their studies and assignments they have gotten. And they actually read and study or watch and listen. That's one. The second thing is they actually want to learn more. They actually want to learn more. So for guest members, I've invited friends to come along who want to learn more. No commitments, no rituals, no vows and no initiations, no ceremonies. It's simple and easy. We get beautiful books and writings and VCDs and DVDs from all lineages of Buddhism, from all different teachers. And we study, and we listen, and we discuss, and we share, and we investigate. Why? To enhance our learning. That's what this is all about. This place is free. We have kind sponsors who have taken care of this house, painted it up, arranged it. We have kind assistants and staff who clean the place, vacuum, prepare, make the offerings, and make sure everything is ready for all of you to walk in. There are even people who set up the chairs and make sure you have water. Everything is set up. Why? To facilitate the Dharma. So it's very, very kind. So what it is, you literally walk into a Dharma disco. And the Dharma disco is more in here. So today, when we talk about Dharma, we're going to go into the Dharma disco inside here. This is the best disco. Why is it the best disco? Discos are meant to distract our mind, remember? So why don't we distract our mind here? Why do we always have to distract our mind in the way the planet tells us that we have to distract our mind? There are many ways to distract our mind. Many ways. So if we want to distract it, we can distract it with a drink, or we can distract it with miktama. We can distract it with miktama, we can distract it with meditation or learning Dharma. Anyways, we're in this. Even if we sit at home, we're going to be here for a few hours, so get ready. But it's going to be the best few hours of your week. Why is that? Because if you're at home, what would you be doing? If you're not here, what would you be doing? You'd be at home with the astro on, like me, watching it for hours and hours, forgetting about whatever. You'd be going to the gym and doing your nasty little exercises. You never lose any weight at all. How many people, you go to the gym, you see how fat they are. You go, why are they here? Okay, so maybe they're new. But then after 6 months, 1 year, you look at them, why are they here? What are they doing? And there are people at the gym, have you noticed? They work out while they're talking on the phone. And I'm like, oh, that's great. I wish I can do that too. Have you seen that? Have you seen people, they hog a machine. They never move from the machine. They sit there and talk to their friend. And you're standing nearby like, They go, can I help you? Get out of the machine. That's what you can talk over there in the juice bar. Have you seen that? So we want to be like those people who are at the gym, never lose any weight and never gain an ounce of muscle. Have you seen that? So we want to join Dharma and our mind never gets well. Are we in the Dharma for conversation, for juice, to pick up somebody? What are we here at the Dharma for? We're here in the Dharma to transform. So don't be one of those Dharma gym goers who never lose any weight at the gym and never lose any excess baggage emotionally in the Dharma center. So think about that. Is that how your life is? In the Dharma center, you don't lose any excess weight at all, your baggage, your emotional baggage. And then at the gym, you don't lose any kgs either. So when you look inside, a lot of baggage. You look outside, a lot of baggage. Think about it. Some of us are like that. We walk around with all this baggage. Some of us outwardly don't have a lot of baggage. We're quite skinny, but inwardly we have more baggage, bigger than a sumo. Think about that. So are we going to come to the center like another gym activity? Just do the exercises, but never get any results. And pretty soon you hit middle age. You look at yourself, you say, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point of going to the gym? Everything is hanging. Everything is loose. I don't even have to run to make it bounce. I walk and it bounces. What's the point? Then that's where we come to a point where we're in Dharma. We listen to it. We listen to it. We become Dharma impervious. What it says in a book, Dharma immune. Why is it? Whatever it says, yeah, yeah, I heard it. Yeah, yeah, I've done that. Yeah, yes. Listen to that one. Yeah, yeah. We become impervious. Why? Because we believe that we cannot change. So we become Dharma impervious, and that's very bad. Because those who are Dharma impervious usually are also in life impervious. Impervious means it cannot affect you. It cannot break through. It cannot break through to you. So being impervious to something means it cannot affect you. So if you have a strong body, you can run around in the rain, you won't get the flu the next day. Your immune system is very high. So if you have a strong ego, the Dharma cannot break through. Cannot break through at all. So usually it's quite connected. Why? What we do in our normal lives reflects our mind. It's very important to know that. So to become Dharma impervious is very scary. Why? In life, when we are impervious to things, it's scary. People give us advice, we don't listen. We don't have effort, we don't push ourselves. Our mothers give us advice, we don't listen. Our friends give us advice, we don't listen. And it just doesn't affect us. And we just keep wanting to bring more unhappiness to ourselves and others. We become impervious. And that's very dangerous. Why? Because your old habits took over. For many lifetimes, it took over. So if it's like that, you can pretty much assume that the rest of your life is going to be pretty not happy. And death and next life is going to be pretty much unhappy. Why? Your mind now is your same as the mind going to be 5 years from now. It's the same mind. Same thing. Your mind doesn't, you don't switch minds. You don't open your brain, switch your mind, put another mind in. It's the same. So we can't become Dharma impervious. In life, we cannot be impervious. When people criticize us, we cannot be impervious. We have to listen to the criticism always, whether we're 50, 100, or 20, or 30, or 15. We have to listen to their criticism to see if it is real. It is real. If it is real, I must be wrong. Everybody cannot be wrong. So we must do something about ourselves. To react back with anger when we're criticized. To react back with negative emotion when we're criticized. When we react back that way, it is a clear signal. A clear signal that we've been in Dharma. Just like going to a disco. Temporary distraction. So we have to stop fooling ourselves like that. That's very important. So therefore, as I said, those of you who engage in this class, who read, who answer the questions, this is the offering of Dharma. What's the difference that you do studies now and you've done studies elsewhere? Whatever studies you've done in your life, whether you're a physicist, psychologist, an actor, whether you're a banker, whether you're a show person, whatever you are, it doesn't really matter. You have to study to get there. But think about it carefully. In the end, whatever you've studied and whatever craft you have, how will it help you in the end? How will it benefit you in the long run? How? How will it benefit you at the time of death? So we have to think very carefully. So when we do this study, it benefits us because we're talking about ourselves. The foundation of all that we do, we're talking about ourselves. So this study is not simple. Those who are sincere and who really done the studies and did the work well, I'm very happy for them. Why am I very happy for them? Because these people who've done the study and read and answered the questions, they really want to improve their life. If you didn't read even just 4 or 5 chapters, 1 month, you didn't read and you can't answer and you can't think, then you say that I want happiness. Oh, I'm doing study, or I'm working, or I'm doing my own business. Those will not bring you happiness. Look at your mothers, look at your fathers, look at your grandparents, look at the world. It's not going to bring you happiness. So that this reading and study and investigation is more powerful than making offerings to the Buddhas. You make offerings to the Buddhas with silver bowls, the 5 century offerings, so light, incense, water. This is very good, but this is more powerful. Why? This doesn't transform your mind, this does. So that's why at each class we get together, I make an offering. I take this, transform it into the 8 auspicious signs, and offer it to Lord Tsongkhapa for all of you. Those of you who put effort, I offer it. So for this month's effort, you have collected merit, especially toward learning, understanding, and wisdom. It's offered to Lama Tsongkhapa. You see, if I take it, read, I feel happy, no happy, it doesn't make a difference for you, merit-wise, but it will if I make an offering to Lama Tsongkhapa. For some of you, in 1 month, the only actual Dharma you do is this. Just this. Why is the Dharma work? Because you're reading the Dharma? Because you're reading the Dharma book? No. It's Dharma work because it is something to make you investigate deeper into your mind. Very deep. Why do you think physicists, biologists, chemists, doctors, nurses, engineers, professors, PhD holders, all go to a Dharma teacher or a Lama to receive teachings? Why do you think? The Lama didn't even finish first grade, barely passed kindergarten. Why? Because their knowledge has a limit. The Lama's knowledge has no limit. Why does it have no limit? Because it talks about the mind, which goes from one life to another life to another life. It's very rare to see a Lama go get teachings from an engineer or a doctor or a physicist. It's very rare. I've never heard of it. They can discuss things, but you will see these great beings, these great doctors and men or women, go to a Lama to receive teachings. Why? Because ultimately, whatever you study has very has big limitations. Very big limitations. So again,
oh dear.
I'm trying to offer the 8 auspicious signs. I can't even offer one.
Oh dear.
Maybe if I spill some water on it or in the dark, it's invisible ink.
Oh dear.
And there's David trying to look, who's the name? Who is it, huh? Who? This one quite cute, right? Very big one, a 3-page. Never mind, looks good.
This one very big, and some more space in between. Thank you very much.
Let me see. Good. I'll look over this later and offer it up. Some people put titles, you know? Their name, the title, what the date is. So neat. It's like a class assignment. Nice, huh? Nice. Nice, not bad. Ah, they put their Dharma name, Tenzin Tarpa. Nice. Your hair grows, what, 0.5 centimeter per year? Are you still cutting it? Let it grow. I don't want to be the only good-looking one here, you know? Let it grow. Jeez, it's like that 1 year, and the next year is like that next year. By the time it's like that, it's like 10 years from... Let it grow. Oh, dear. Surrendering our ownership of our life. Lick.
Oh dear.
I've got signals and indications and very spiritual type of messages of what you were in your previous life. Licky. Very, very deep spiritual insight because of my meditations and who you were after I saw the evil MMS.
Oh dear.
Let's see what Licky wrote. The practice of Guru Yoga is a balanced trust and surrender on one hand and self-responsibility on the other. Means to trust and surrender oneself to our Lama's instructions to us without surrendering ourselves of our life. I got one question. Do you surrender your tongue? Licky. All right. Some of us will know what licky means. Oh, I wouldn't look innocent, Kenny and Paris. Oh, dear. Give him a little bit of club soda and look what comes out. Imagine you give him the hard stuff. They'd be doing more than licking at that wedding. I was amazed at the pictures that came in. Amazed. Of actually Paris and Kenny. Okay, forget the Dharma. Let's talk about the wedding. Oh, dear. I was amazed. Amazed at Paris and Kenny in a picture. And Kenny looked like some ex has been porn star with his posing. And Paris with her head all tilted. Actually, she looked quite glamorous, quite tilted and cocked up. She was like... And then Kenny was on this side connecting with her. I mean, it was a soul connection, of course. And you know, I actually did the view image where you zoom in. It was just about to touch. I was amazed. And then while Paris and Kenny was sitting here soul searching each other, there was JT sitting on the side smiling. JT was waiting her turn. I'm not kidding. Kenny and Paris are licking each other. You know, it's not even lick, you know, with JP it's not so bad. It's just your face or your ear or your neck or whatever. But these people actually, they want to get into your inner self. So these two are licking and finding their inner selves. And JT, I swear, JT's sitting nearby like this. What's a decent married woman with 3 grown-up kids looking at other people licking each other and smiling for? It could be only she wants some too. I was amazed. The two people licking each other, I said, whatever. If you know these two people, like, whatever. But now we know how to get some money out of Kenny, huh?
We show that to his girlfriend. Paris, you can't get any money. She'll say, Shola. To her, it's advertisement. It's what she can do. And then, like I said, that was nothing. But JT, that was amazing. I wish we could print that picture out and hang it up somewhere, you know? I mean, she was literally like... I'm not kidding. I was amazed. And then the next picture I got of that was of JP and David. And then there was somebody else on the other side of David. Who was that? He can't remember. He was tipsy. And somebody was licking David on this side, and JP was on this side like this. I mean, his face was flat as a plate. He was like... He was pushed against David. I was amazed. I saw the tongue, though, because I view image and zoomed in. I just saw it was like... The tongue was, like, flat because it was pushed against the face. Like, oh, dear. It looked like Kali. Amazing. And then after that, Kenny... And then JP forced Pearlie, grabbed Pearlie and forced this decent, Buddha-fearing, married woman onto a chair, and they started licking her. I was amazed. And you can see in the picture, Pearlie was not enjoying it. Her glasses were like, you know, like that. It was crooked. And then these two guys are pressed against her, and you can see they're holding her hands down. She's like, snap. I was amazed. And I thought, we go to a decent wedding to wish someone happy life. And the KH people are having a tongue orgy there. Oh my, it was horrible. We made such a scene, and you know, they're gonna really talk about us all over the place and say, what kind of Dharma freak group is that? Who are they? What are they? Why? Why is this allowed? Why did their guru allow it? So they see a picture of me. Amazing. It was disgusting. I was totally, totally not embarrassed. Amazing, amazing. Just amazing. And then I heard that Susan came out in drag. Yeah, I was amazed. You know, nobody dared take a picture of her. It was too much. Susan came out with a dress, makeup, and heels, I was told. She came out in drag. And then Sharon came out in a suit and pants or something. I'm like, what is this, a Halloween party? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if some other people were at the party? I won't mention any names because I don't want to embarrass them. You know me, I'm subtle. But imagine they cut their hair, gel it up, lose some weight, 20 kgs, get rid of the white morning outfit, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, morning. Get a tattoo here, you know, hearts, I love Annie or something. And they walk in with jeans and cowboy boots, and they walk in like, hey, I'm Bill. Oh, dear. Would that really shock you? I think Kichara House should have a Halloween party. I think every year during Halloween, we should have a Halloween party. And you know what's great is all of you just come as you are. You just come as you are. Just think about it. You know, Henry walks in and pretends he's a Dharma student. What are you? I'm a Dharma student. A great costume. Koki walks in. He's a gym instructor. Just think. Cha walks in and he just tells you, I found myself. For some of you, you know the meaning. Just think about that. Paris walks in, she tells you, I'm a human. I'm like, okay, great costume. And then Susan comes in a dress again, but we're going to have to brace ourselves to have a drink. Oh. And then Bill actually walks in and tells you he's getting married to a woman. Great costume. JB comes in as himself. What are you? I'm the tongue. That's right, I'm just the tongue. That's right. Mr. Ngao walks in as Santa Claus. As himself, he passes out the gifts and everything, cherry blossoms, everything, you know, passes out to everybody. It's wonderful.
Just think about that. We make a great... So when we open up our Buddha Oasis, we're going to have Halloween parties there. I might attend. I'm going to dress up as a Rinpoche. They say, hey, what are you? I'm a Rinpoche. They say, great costume. I almost believe you. Thank you. Remember that? Thank you. That's why I'm going to come in as a Rinpoche. We'll ignore the raucous crowds. We'll ignore the rude crowds. We'll pretend we didn't hear that. Now, this is wonderful. I've offered, oh dear. Koki wrote small, no space in between, and four pages. Oh dear. That's your Manjushri class instructor. You ever see people walk into the Dharma Center? They say, hey, it's loud, it's fun, it's neat, it's really easygoing. The Lama there is obnoxious. We have a great time, and we even learn. And they walk in on Sunday and see Koki. Did you study the three principal paths on the chapter on emptiness? Did you? And you're like, what? Yeah, don't you love it? They say, well, where's that fun, happy room? Because Koki kind of looks like me 5 years ago. You've seen me 5 years ago, right? Let me show you here. I found this. See, that's me 5 years ago on the floor. Doesn't that look like Koki with no hair? Look at that. I went to have audience with His Eminence Lama Sopa Rinpoche. He's one of my gurus. I talked to him last year. He called me up. Actually, he emailed me, and I called him up, and I talked to him. For about 20 minutes, he was in Singapore giving teachings. It was late last year. Very nice. Anyway, this is what I look like. See? That doesn't look like Koki. Look at it. I'm telling you. Yeah. David comes and tells me, people tell me I look like him. I'm like, keep wishing. He always tells me that. You know, people ask me all the time, is that you on the screen? Is that you in the picture? I'm like, oh, please. Can you imagine that? Is that me? He always tells me. And they even say, you sound like him. I'm like, oh, geez. Some people, I tell you, they have fantasies. JJ printed out these cards. I don't know. I forgot why, but I think it's for a good reason. It's beautiful. The Lama Tsongkhapa little name cards with mantras, the three mantras in the back, so we can, you know, go and pass out to people. He's been doing that for years. He makes all kinds of things, stand on the street and passes out to people. Some kind of missionary. I think his previous life was some kind of Buddhist nun. Which is good. Buddhist nuns are wonderful. Lama Yeshe's previous life was a Buddhist nun, very attained. Nothing wrong. That's not nice. I'm going to pass one out to everybody for auspicious reasons afterwards, during the break. And thank you. It's very well done. Good initiative. He's going to be at the outlets passing this out on Chinese New Year. So it's like, gong si, gong si, fa chai, si. Better than those tangerines you never eat, you know? No offense, I get like 500 tangerines every year. I'm like, oh. By the time I finish, I tell you, when I poop, tangerines come out. So it's okay, but I love it. I offer it up. Okay, now, I want to talk about some things that I came across in the readings, which is something what you guys are talking about, and I'm going to discuss it. I wrote little notes down. And the newbies here, people are very new to this class as guests. I recommend you to please get this book from Jenny. She'll somehow, by hook or crook, arrange it for you. Get it, read it. It's very beautiful, it's very light, and it's the subject we're talking about. So those of you who don't have this, get it from Jenny. Trust me, it's very, very, very beautiful. People's experiences, light and easy, subject by subject, all right? That's for the newbies. And then I want to make a quick announcement, which is without anybody asking, without anybody imploring, without anybody making any requests, we're supplying the necessities for Ganden to have a hospital. For Ganden Shatse Monastery, which is in South India, too, they have built a hospital. I heard Singaporeans or something got together and built the physical hospital, but they don't have anything on the inside. Equipment, doctors, medicine, trays, beds, they don't have anything. And the monks need it, the local people there need it very much. And before that, they had a teeny little clinic for years, but it closed down due to lack of resources. So anyway, they built a beautiful hospital, and the abbots behind this, and the abbots requested me very much for us to help. So on this hospital committee, number one is Mr. Mao, who's very, very kind, who's doing that, who's got a website out on it for us, and he's in charge of all of that. And Mr. Mao himself is very kind because he's put up his life savings into a fixed account, and the interest is generated and given over to the hospital in India. Wow. And so I want to talk about that. And on top of that, our own Dato Jeffrey Ng, which is Datin's husband, has generously donated 50,000 ringgits to the hospital fund. And Dato Jeffrey Ng has also donated 3,000 ringgits to the Kichara Soup Kitchen. So every Saturday, we have a group of wonderful Kichara Soup Kitchen people who go out there and give food. Kenny seems to be very entrenched in that. He likes it. He likes walking the streets, looking for people to offer food and maybe some saliva. So Kenny's been working very hard on that. And anyways, $3,000 has been offered for the Kichara Soup Kitchen to buy food every Saturday to give food to the homeless. What a great job. Like I said to you people before, I want a soup kitchen to manifest in downtown. I want our people here to give food to our people there. And I want a soup kitchen to manifest. And that will manifest if we keep doing this. So $3,000 has come in for the food. I'll leave it to the KSK committee on how, what, whatever. And then I think the hospital committee should write a very beautiful letter with a little bit of token sent to Dato to say thank you. And same thing with the KSK. I think it would be very, very nice. So you guys have a little meeting how to do that. Because these are very generous. And Dato, the Chinese New Year's is coming. What a beautiful way to celebrate by offering to something that helps others. That's a beautiful way to start it. So I rejoice for them, all right? So let everybody know the good news. Those who are not here, let everybody know. That's one. And after this, I need to have a quick and short meeting with the writers regarding a new manual I would like to come out with that I was inspired by this afternoon. So whenever I'm inspired, you guys get to work. Isn't that fun? And Paris is like, yeah, we've heard it before. I'm going to burn Paris out again. I'm going to make sure she's squeaking and burning and steaming and smoking. I'm going to burn you out after this session, sister.
Can I have a week off and rest?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm nice to you. Now sit down and work.
Oh, please.
No. Don't you love it?
Please, can I have a week off?
No.
What happens if I take a week off without your permission?
You go to hell.
Ow. But my dad says I don't go to hell because it's kind of like not bad karma because I don't have any bad motivation. Yeah, what do you think about that?
You're wrong.
Why?
You're not allowed to ask. Just follow. That was my mimicry of certain strange Dharma students who ask strange questions. Don't you love it? All right. Now, I found the reading very interesting because... Okay, before I start that, I would like everybody to please silently... Remember, we got neighbors. You know, the neighbors know. Because sometimes the neighbors ask one of our assistants, when we're walking over here, they say, hey, you're going sembahyang. They're like, uh-oh. They know we're sembahyang in this room. We're like, uh-oh. And for you non-freaky Malaysians who don't speak Malay like we do, sembahyang means pray. Learn. That's right. There's a few freaky non-Malaysians here who look very freaky and weird. That's right. You know who you are. Mm-hmm. And for those of you, with no offense, who have the fortune to attend this class, remember everything's provided for you. There's nothing to be critical about. Everything's totally provided. The teacher's provided for you. The teaching's provided for you. The place is provided for you. Everything's provided for you. All you have to do is show up and learn. Just think about that, the great opportunity at hand. So instead of searching the net, instead of searching the libraries, instead of trying to do mantras and getting visions of Buddhas, you have a teacher right here. You have a center right here. You have everything available here. So when your teacher is dead or your teacher is not available, or there's no teachers, not even your teacher is not around, then search the net. Do mantras and look for visions to get teachings. Until then, no point. It's just like when Milarepa's student Rejungpa asked him if I can go to Bodh Gaya to do pilgrimage. Milarepa told him the best pilgrimage place is where your guru is. That's the best pilgrimage place. So higher practitioners would understand that. Okay? So what I'm trying to say is seize and take hold of this opportunity we have at hand to share the Dharma. Everything is impermanent. Everything ends. Nothing lasts. Seize this opportunity. Everything is so easy. So easy and available. Page 52 and 53. I love what it says here, page 52, the next to last paragraph. Pam admitted that since being asked to tell her story, it had set in motion quite a process for her, as she had deeply examined her relationship with her teacher and what it meant to her. She makes it very clear that it is important not to get caught up with the teacher, but to follow the teachings. Sometimes we have unresolved issues with power, authority figures, ambitions, hopes for love, fear of rejection. All this baggage that we carry around us often unconsciously makes us project onto the teacher, and I like to add onto others. We expect so much that we completely miss the point. However, if we listen and learn and test out and use what we hear, then we see the results very quickly, rather than getting bogged down in our own neurosis. In fact, the Buddha himself advised not to get caught up as what is known as the four reliances. Rely on the message of the teacher, not on his personality. Rely on the meaning, not just the words. Rely on real meaning, not just on provisional ones. Rely on your wisdom mind, not on your ordinary judgmental mind. Pam also realized that she has developed incredible trust not only in Rinpoche, but in herself. Of course, it is impossible to deeply trust others if we don't have that trust in ourselves. However, it clearly illustrates the point that the relationship with the teacher is actually about the relationship with ourselves. That relationship helps us to become more authentic, more of who we really are, the extent that the teacher merely mirrors or reflects what that is. Sogyal Rinpoche often uses this example. We know what our face looks like when we look in the mirror, but we have never actually seen it directly. The teacher introduces us directly to what we really are. So the outer teacher is a reflection of our inner teacher. The teacher embodies the teachings. And this is what I've been explaining to you guys for years, is that guru devotion is not some weird fanatical practice that you surrender yourself to the guru and you do whatever they say. That's not guru devotion. That's what I've been talking about for a long, long time. Guru devotion is surrendering yourself to yourself. Surrendering yourself to yourself is guru devotion. And you see a lot of these advanced practitioners who have been practicing for 10, 20 years, they realize that point. And we need to learn that point. Because you know why we need to learn it from these advanced practitioners? Because it will save us a lot of headache and time wastage. Why is it when we don't trust ourselves, we don't trust our teachers? Why is it not trusting our teachers makes us not trust ourselves? What's the interconnection here? And that's what this beautiful lady, Pam, explores. And she came in her journey. And I find it very, very, very beautiful. Her writing was very touching. It was very touching because the meaning is quite deep. It's not deep simply because its meaning is something that this lady, I feel, has realized. What she has realized in a nutshell is surrendering to your guru is not surrendering to a person. It is surrendering to yourself. And those who have fear of surrendering to their guru have fear from themselves. Why is that? When we have unresolved issues with power, we feel that this person is taking away our freedom. that they don't allow us to do this and that and that and this and this, and they're really critical, and they judge us, and they don't allow us to do these things. Actually, it's not our gurus allowing this with us. It's our own unresolved issues with power. You see, we come from societies all over the world that there are issues that you can do this, you cannot do that, you can do that, you cannot do this. But those rules don't apply here. Why don't they apply here? Those are simply rules to make a country run well, or a family run well, or a business run well. But those are rules just for temporary benefit. The rules that your guru is talking about is not rules made up by man, is not rules made up by a country or by an institution. It is universal rules for every sentient being that is natural and abiding and constant. Example, not killing, not stealing, not lying, not taking your temper out on others to hurt them, not having a selfish temperamental mind. Those are not rules made up by man. It's not made up by God. It's not made up by a Buddha. It's not made up by a lama or people or an institution. It is universal, natural law for everybody who abides and resides in a universe who wants happiness. And that's what we need to realize. So when we have authority figure power issues with our boss telling us what to do, with society or whatever, we have these big issues. They don't apply to Dharma, so we shouldn't project those onto a Dharma teacher or to Dharma situations. Whereas, oh, if they say, oh, you can't drink this, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you shouldn't get all frustrated and flustered and worried. Why? It is not the same rules as the outside rules. So people say, oh, I'm afraid to take refuge vows. I'm afraid to take refuge. There's all these rules I can't follow. And I find it quite interesting because it shows me clearly that they still equate those with some kind of power figure or something about losing your freedom. You don't lose your freedom. When you abide by natural universal law of compassion and forgiveness and tolerance and acceptance, you don't lose your freedom at all. In fact, you gain it. It is intolerance that makes us not free and make us locked in. It is not accepting that makes us locked in and narrow. It is not following the rules that make us lose our freedom. The Buddha is free. So in fact, that's a power issue that we shouldn't project onto others. Ambitions. We think that if we enter the Dharma, we're going to end up coming back looking like Lim Tat Meng. Underweight, wearing tired little blue Dharma t-shirts with Omani Pemeho on them, no hair, looking like a skeleton, hanging out in some weird third world country in the forest pretending he's an arhat. That we can't make money, that we can't have a nice house or a nice car, and we can't have nice things and nice friends. No! What Lim Tat Meng does and what you do has no difference if the motivation is correct. We can be enlightened sitting inside a BMW. We can be enlightened sitting in the middle of a forest. Do you think His Holiness runs around? Do you think His Holiness the Dalai Lama runs around, you know, being escorted here and there in a Ford Chevrolet from 1969? I don't think so. Black stretched limos. But he's enlightened. We can be enlightened inside a BMW. We can be enlightened in a cave. So what Lim Tat Meng does and other people do, it actually doesn't make any difference if the motivation is correct. So when we feel that, hey, if we practice the Dharma, we have to give up our ambitions. We can't have a nice house. We cannot ever have tongue licking again. And Kachara House proved that wrong. I encourage it. Get a blood test and lick all you want. Gotta be politically correct these days. Take a blood test first before you lick them. But Paris like, oh darn it, I forgot. Somehow I feel Paris somewhat regrets that. Because she has this deep clairvoyant feeling it's going to be brought up again and again for the next decade. And somehow the pictures will be flashed onto the internet. And let's hope her holy smoly father doesn't see it and go, ah, I knew it! I knew that's what they were doing! I'll be like, uh-oh. His suspicions came true. And he's like, that's that nasty Rinpoche, but he doesn't look as good as he did last year. That's because it's Kenny. Ow! Oh.
Yeah, some of you got it. Some of you are still thinking. Feng is sitting there thinking, okay, never mind. I'll go and meditate on it later. Stick around. This is just the beginning. I'm the most controversial Lama on this planet, and it's going to get worse. I know you like it, because you're pretty controversial too. I know more about you than you think I know. I'm a Tibetan Rinpoche with a third eye. On another planet, they'd call me a Martian, but never mind. Now, why can't Dharma be fun? Why can't Dharma be natural? You guys are fun. You guys are natural. So why not? This is not Tibet. This is Malaysia. So we teach for the Malaysians. Fun, easy, relax, stretch your legs. I can't teach like there. You can't attend teachings like I used to attend. But there's nothing wrong with you. You're different. The culture is different. So we make it for the culture here. I make myself look like the culture here. I make myself talk and act like the culture here. Why? Because it'll bring Dharma easier to people. Very simple. It's called compassion. It's called skillful means. I don't have compassion, but I'm trying to develop it. So that's a method. It's very simple. Now, ambition. Oh, you know, if I practice Dharma, then I can't have... oh my God, Paul is smiling. First time doing a Dharma talk. Must be the tongue thing. I'm not kidding. I never see Paul smile, never. He's an accountant, you know. He looks like Mrs. Ngao. Mrs. Ngao smiled too. They look like brother and sister. Yeah, they never smile one. They're always like, you know. I mean, they're very nice, but look like a cockroach. But Paul smile. Must be the licky licky thing. So we think, oh, I can't have ambition. Oh, I'm going to get something. My hands itch like crazy today. All of a sudden, I'm going to get a present. I'm going to get some money. I'm not kidding. Look at this. There's not even a mosquito here. Okay, never mind. That's my own little superstition. You know, my hand itch something, I'll get. This mean money, this one mean present. So this one itch, I'm like happy. This one itch, I'm very happy. Well, all of us are. We're human beings, what? Yeah. I use my money for Ganden. I don't know what you use your money for, so I'll be happy for Ganden. Very itchy. It's going driving me nuts now. Okay, now. More. Okay, now. So we think that if we do Dharma, we have issues with ambition. That's going to ruin our ambition. That we can't study. That we can't be who we want to be. We can't, you know, open up shop. We can't do business. We can't have a nice car. We can't have a nice family. We cannot have a nice family. We got to be this way. We got to be that way. We got to be that way. We got to be this way. You know, all these issues come up. So we're afraid. We're afraid to surrender to our guru. We're afraid to surrender to the Dharma. But you see, surrendering to your guru, surrendering to Dharma has nothing to do with giving up your lifestyle. Has nothing to do with that. It's never been about that. It's never been. That's why you see great Mahasiddhas in the past. They were born as princes and lived in great palaces, great kings, great masters. They lived as, you know, the servants to courtesans. They lived as kings. They lived as courtesans. They lived as beggars. They were everyone who became enlightened in different parts of society, in different aspects of society, because it's not about giving up your lifestyle. That's why if we study the Mahasiddha lineage and stories, it's very beautiful, because they come from all types of backgrounds. Some are bird catchers, or were. Some are just gluttons. They sit there and think about food all day. Oh, yes. There's one Mahasiddha, he's called the glutton, literally. He became enlightened though. He ate food and became enlightened. We ate food and we end up in the gym. Big difference. All right, so hope of giving up, it has nothing to do with that. Then some people have issues that, oh, you know, if I practice Dharma, I can't have love. I can't have love, I can't have a relationship. Who I sleep with, how I sleep, when I sleep, and what I do when I'm sleeping with someone is dictated by the Buddha. So I don't want to surrender myself to that. I don't want to surrender to this because I lose my freedom of sensual pleasure. That's also wrong. Look at all these tantric deities. They all have their lovers. Every tantric deity, the highest, in fact, they're the highest tantric deities. They all have lovers, what? They're always in union.
They're looking at you because they're in great bliss. Very happy. Oh, don't see any here. No, not here. So, oh yeah, over there. All these tantric deities. So what am I trying to say? You don't give up love. Oh, I can't have a relationship. A relationship would be evil. I'm not holy if I look for a relationship. If I look for a relationship and I want a relationship, I keep a relationship, it's against Buddha's teachings. No. No. Definitely not. Definitely not. And then what kind of relationship? Can I have a man? Can I have a woman? Can I have something in between? Can I have neither? Can I do it with an animal? Look, if it doesn't hurt the other being, that's what you should think about. If it doesn't hurt the other person. I'm not here propagating or being a poster boy for illicit, abnormal sex here. I'm not trying to be poster boy here. I'm trying to tell you the motivation is the factor. Look, once you leave this room, all of you, okay, except 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, won't have bubbly. But everybody else will. Everybody else will. But just because you're not having bubbly doesn't mean that if you think about it, it's not the same. What's more negative, to kill one person or to sit there and meditate on killing 1,000 every day and thinking how, and plotting and praying, I want to kill 1,000? Think. So just because you don't engage in bubbly, all right, let me say it's sex, doesn't mean you're holy and smoly and the rainbows come out of your lower regions. And just because you engage in sex doesn't mean the rainbows stop coming out from your lower regions. Other things come out too, but rainbows too. It has nothing to do with that. So what am I encouraging? Go out and have sex? No. Be yourself. Be yourself. You have a body. It has needs. It needs to eat. It needs to sleep. It needs to rest. So if you sleep, it's bad karma? No. But if you're always sleepy, it's bad karma. Why? It arises from bad karma. It's a distraction for your practice. But sleeping is not bad karma. If you're eating, is it bad karma? No, of course you need to eat. You got a human body, you got to eat, you need petrol. And then your body has other needs, it has fevers, needs Panadol. It builds up, it has some natural regenerative procreative forces in it that's, you know, from you know, aeons ago. So all these are very natural, but it's your motivation behind it. So if I do Dharma, or if I surrender to my guru, if I take refuge, I can't have sex anymore. No. No. I don't want to get into big details about it. It's unnecessary, but no, that's not the point. You don't have to stop. You don't have to change. You don't have to alter. What you have to do is not harm. So in Buddhism, and in the higher law of human relations, and in the universal law, if we have a partner, and we've sworn to our partner, and we do things outside of our partner's knowledge and hurt our partner, no one needs to tell you that's good or bad. If it creates pain, it's bad. If it creates pain and it's bad, then the pain will come back to you. That's law. What we call yin guo in Chinese, right? In Tibetan, len je, le da jibu, karma and its effects. So it's not like your guru tells you, oh, it's bad, you know, it's bad. You can't have 25 affairs, you know, it's very bad, bad, bad. Whether guru tells you or not, you should know that. If you didn't know that, you wouldn't be doing secretly, would you? You wouldn't go to JP69 Hotel and rent it for 2 hours, a room. You wouldn't. So is that criticism? No, it's not. So having fear of engaging in Dharma practice to be told that, you shouldn't be afraid. Why? You already know that. You already know. But what you need to know is its effects and how it comes about and why we do it and understand it. To understand it and to come to terms with it. So when we understand and come to terms with it, we stop doing it not because we go to hell. We stop doing it not because we're some holy moly Buddhist and we're taking refuge. We stop doing it because we went to Burma. You know, it's none of that. We stop doing it because our mind has realized it doesn't bring any benefit. So why waste our time? So when we engage in Buddhist practice or surrender to a guru, we have that fear. We lose our sexual freedom. We don't. But we lose our freedom to create harm by sex. That's what we lose. You know how we lose it? Because the guru tells you no. Because Buddha tells you no? No. Because the Buddha tells you why. And the guru translate that for you in today's terms. And then you think about it and say, yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of things in life we stop doing because we found out it's harmful. You know, we look at surveys and studies. We listen to the doctors. We listen to our friends. Go, oh yeah, if we do that, it's harmful, huh? And we stop. We stop not because it's sinful, because it's harmful. I mean, who wants asbestos in their ceilings now? In the 60s and 70s, it was very big. It's cheap. It's easy. But we find out later everybody gets lung cancer. I was breathing asbestos in my school in New Jersey for 8 years. Then later, 10, 15 years later, they say, oh, guess what? You're going to get lung cancer. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. So now people don't use this. It's not good or bad karma. So why don't we think about it like that? Abstaining from sex or having sex is like asbestos. Think of it like that. Why think of it like that? Because that's what it's all about. I'm demystifying it for you. See, I don't like religions and I don't like teachers and people that put you down and harm you and slap you down and tell you you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, and don't question it. I don't like that. Do you know why I don't like it? Because telling me that doesn't help me to change. It adds more guilt to me. And people express guilt differently. Some people do more. Some people don't care anymore. Some people do it, they don't feel good. Anything. So guilt doesn't help. It doesn't help. So therefore, we have that fear. Then we have fear, love, that we can't have relationships. Of course we can have relationships. What do you think? Once you become a Buddhist, you take refuge, or you're doing Buddhist practices, or you can't have it anymore? You see, in Christianity, they say that marriage and a man and woman joining is very sacred, and it's in the eyes of God and blah, 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 whatever, all that stuff. In Buddhism, they don't highlight that in weddings. There are Buddhist weddings. There are ceremonies for people getting married. The thing is this, it's not that it's good or bad. It's not that it's opposite. In Buddhism, the focus is not about money. It's not about marriage. It's not about relations. It's not about any of that. If those things help you, go ahead and do it. It's about finding yourself. So Buddhist teachings highlight more the deeper inner teachings of human awareness. It doesn't focus on those. It has those. Of course it has marriage ceremonies. Of course, I've conducted Buddhist weddings before. I've given them the vows. Of course there is, but it's not about that. So in Christianity, for some Christianity, some Christian practitioners, not all, some, that's the epitome. That's it, you know, in the eyes of God, blah, we get married, wear the dress, and blah, oh, we go to the temple, I'm sorry, to the church, and that's it. Nothing else beyond that. But what makes it so sacred if afterwards you're hating each other, cheating on each other, lying to each other?